is John Mark Reynolds, and you're listening to Middlebrow, a service of Scriptorium Daily. And today, we're going to put education, a big idea, through the digital martyrdom. We could go all the... Well, forget it. I'm not going to get my ESPN
are you channeling
gag.
Shatner?
Yeah, no, it was Berman. I was going to go for an ESPN gig. With me today... sitting here in the fabulous and wealthy Tory Honors Studios is, as usual, my colleague Paul Spears. But the show took a turn up intellectually and in terms of goodness, truth, and beauty because
and
we're
just
also
general attractiveness.
Yeah, that's we're also joined by Rebecca Fort, who, if you're an alum, you knew as Rebecca Schmidt, winner of the St. Anne's Award, Tory's highest award when she graduated, and the director of Wheatstone Academy, the single most fabulous program in the United States for high school students. But before we get into Wheatstone and what's going on with that, and don't think this is going to be a commercial. It isn't. We are going to talk about education. Paul Spears, you're the philosopher of education around here. Why does education seem so screwed up? Most people listening send their kids to government schools. We spend billions of dollars on them. They're messed up. What's going on?
Well, see, I think it is the fundamental purpose of education is lost. It used to be to train people to understand who they were as humans. It was to help them be a part of society. It was to make
them
leaders.
Paul. I send my kids to school so they can learn to get a job.
To learn to cipher, I know.
I don't want none of them purposes. Having a purpose to your education is actually illegal in 10 states
it is,
in the United States.
Yeah, well, certainly by the educational unions
okay,
it is.
What in the world are you talking about? Don't we send our kids to school so that they can get jobs?
Yeah, I think...
I am channeling Shatner
today.
You are
channeling Shatner.
I'm pausing. Spock! Rebecca Fort! Oh, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
The situation is that people think that education is only for your job acquisition. That's why they go after education today. They think, okay, what you need to do is learn that you're a part of the economy. And what you need to do is produce something in the economy so that the economy gives something back to you. That's all you become. That's exactly right. You are just a cog in a larger machine. And that's because human beings have become measured by the scientific method. And so the only reason
is totally impractical, though, Paul? Are we going to end up educating kids who, I don't know, sit in rooms reading Plato but can't get jobs?
No, I actually think not, because what you're actually doing is teaching them how to understand their humanity.
In other words, becoming a happy and flourishing human being is the most practical thing to do.
That's right. That's actual real training for real life. Learning how to move widgets from one side of the table to the other is the same kind of thing that animals do. I mean, you become like a giant, like a cow, and cows don't live very interesting lives. I'd rather not be one of those.
Oh, okay, this is a perfect time to get Rebecca into this conversation because I know she has a lot to say about this. Rebecca, I'll start by saying, you know, in Wheatstone, you take a lot of kids, whether they're quote-unquote gifted and talented or not, and assume that all people created in God's image are gifted and talented, and you give them the hardest ideas, the best art, the best music, the best of everything. Why isn't this the single most boring thing in the history of humankind and the least practical thing? Are you just creating a generation of intellectual incapable nerds? I mean, what are you doing?
Well, what we find is that the kind of students that come to our program are already so bored. And they're students that are somewhat aware that something's wrong. They're aware that they're being trained to take tests. And they're not satisfied and they're bored. And they come hungry for something deeper and more challenging.
But isn't youth group solving that by having parties and games and treats and things
like that? I hear sarcasm. Hold on.
Wait, is that a softball question or what? No, I'm serious. I mean, our youth groups... what kind of facilities are youth groups? You visit hundreds of them, over the last 3 or 4 years. What do they look like, and what is that doing to our kids?
Well, I find one of the goals of a lot of churches I've seen is to fill the youth group with numbers of students. And they say, what do students do in culture today? They're entertained. They like fun. Let's give them that so that we get them in. And then we'll give them the Bible stuff quickly and quietly right in the middle, but cushion it.
So
like
they don't notice it.
Fun.
It's like I hide in my daughter's... so that my daughter will take certain medicine, I hide it in ice cream. Is that what we're saying?
Exactly.
Wonderful line in Star Trek, sitting on the edge of forever, for those of you who are doing Star Trek nerd references.
I thought we promised never to do that.
No, a guy is sitting there in a soup kitchen, and talking to Captain Kirk, who's also in the soup kitchen, and the person's about to get up to give the sermon, and they're eating soup, and the guy leans over and says, "Now we pay for the soup." Because the little sermon, which in this case is that we should go to outer space, is actually just there so that people can feel good about giving away free food. Is that what the church is doing? Kids come to play with the Xbox that the church, you know, bought on a giant screen, and then they have to pay for their fun by hearing a sermon?
I think that's what I see. And what's interesting, actually, is that they don't actually play with the Xbox as much because they have Xboxes at home all the time.
Right.
So you're really giving them something they get the rest of the week. But for a lot of students, I think they're coming to church for church and for something different.
But okay, Rebecca, you're young, I'm old. You're cool, I'm not. I never was cool. I never wanted to be cool, as a matter of fact. Don't kids want a cool Jesus? Don't they want to hear, not from a PhD in philosophy, but somebody who can relate to the young people?
The Utes.
Yeah, I'm really unsure what the Utes are thinking, and really sure that I don't want to know. Why... What are we doing, and are young people willing to listen to people who aren't relevant?
I think they are. The reality is everywhere they go in their life, people are trying to relate. Their teachers, media, their culture is soaked with entertainment and fun and cool, sexy ways of saying things. And so I think what they want is something real, something different.
So how does Wheatstone do that?
What we do is we give them... We take them to the source of culture. We take them to the source of beauty. And they don't read a textbook about beauty. They actually look at it with their own eyes and feel it with their hands. They read actual
classical
text.
My eyes
text.
Are glazing over, even as you speak. I mean, I'm not even doing it, and my eyes are glazing over. You're telling me, so parents at home, and they're saying, I can't get my kid to read comic books, and you're telling me that they'll sit around and read Plato for a week and talk about it.
They will, because they're not actually taught yet how to read well. And we help them do that. And we have staff that are relatable.
Paul, what are
fun.
We doing with the billions of dollars that we're supposed to be spending as educators on teaching kids to read when Rebecca comes back from the front with really bright kids that you're getting at Wheatstone and that kids don't know how to read? Tell me she's wrong.
No, she's right. The problem is that what we're doing is we're pouring all this money down a hole that has no chance of success.
Give me three things, practical things, that if a parent, and we've got a lot of alum who are parents of, let's say, three-year-old children, four-year-old children who are getting ready to read, pre-reading, what should parents be doing right now to get their kids ready for a Wheatstone experience, a Tory Honors experience?
They need to be reading with their kids. And they need to be talking about the ideas
text. That's so boring.
Yeah, but that is the way you learn. You have to model this excitement. That's why my kids read. My kids read because I read.
Okay, the truth is a lot of parents listening to us now don't like to read themselves.
That's right. That's a problem.
And we say Plato, and they think of that was a planet, wasn't it, at some point? And
then what I would do is then follow the model of programs like Tory and Wheatstone. The parents should find people that like reading and read with them.
That's right.
I can't sit by myself and read Plato for hours. I never would read Plato alone. I always read him with others.
Talk to us about how that happens via Wheatstone when it's not during the summer camp program. I mean, basically, we should be clear to people. Wheatstone Academy is a one-week summer camp experience for kids 16 to 22, roughly. Is that about right?
Right.
So, okay, I'm not going to send my kid to Wheatstone, which is a big mistake. They should, and they should go to the site wheatstoneacademy.com and check you guys out. But if they're not going to do that, if they're not going to be engaged in what I think is the single most important academic program for kids that age, other than Tory Honors in the United States, if they're going to sin in that way, he said sarcastically, what should they be doing practically in the interim?
Yeah, I'd say finding people that read. And it's very simple. Bring a bunch of people over, have good food, and spend an hour talking about a good book.
Okay, no one will do this, will they? Does this actually happen?
Yeah, but isn't that an indictment, though? Isn't that the problem? We've allowed ourselves to misconstrue what education or what entertainment really is. What does it mean to actually enjoy things? We think we have to have somebody giving me something. And that's actually not learning. We have to interact with things to actually gain that kind of knowledge. And that means human interaction, discussing big ideas. That has to be happening.
You know, I actually lead a discussion with a group of business leaders in Irvine. We discuss a great book. We worked our way through Christopher Hitchens' God Is Not Great. And they were craving a Bible study or something where people didn't just sit around and emote and say, now, it's good to have those times, right, where this Bible study is about sharing prayer requests and doing things like that. I lead a Bible study like that on Wednesday nights where it's mostly about praying together and reading the scriptures in that way. Mm-hmm. Rebecca, do you find that people want to do this kind of thing when they try it? At least a certain kind of person wants to do it.
Not everyone will do it, but I think so. If you look at TV, TV networks are scrambling to find new ideas because people are getting increasingly bored with television, and they see the same thing everywhere they go, and it's getting shallower and shallower and shallower. And human beings, if they have any sense of the nature of themselves, can't thrive on that, and people are not thriving on it. And again, the uniqueness is the power of this today.
So Rebecca Fort, who used to be Schmidt, obviously one reason you used to be Schmidt and are now Fort is that you just got married. So
yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Hooray. Tell us who your husband is and tell us how wonderful he is.
Gavin Fort. He's wonderful.
He is wonderful. As a matter of fact, I've chatted with him. Though I have to say his mother strikes me as more wonderful.
Yeah, she's supreme being.
Yeah,
she's awesome.
That's exactly right. She runs the
C.S. Lewis Foundation.
And we love you, C.S. Lewis Foundation people out there that we can be pretty confident aren't listening to this podcast because they have better things to do, this show, changing the West and saving the world and reading C.S. Lewis.
Let me just hook onto the fact that you just use C.S. Lewis as an example. Here was an intellectual who not only did his own work, but got together with other people, which probably a lot of our audience knows as the Inklings, and they talked about big ideas.
Paul, that's so great. Tell us more about the Inklings.
Well, the Inklings were a group of people. Tolkien was one of them. Charles Williams was one of them. There are a lot of other.
Taliesin through Logris, the best book you've never read. If you don't own a copy, go spend the $45 to get a copy online.
And what you can, and there's a great biography by Humphrey Carpenter about the Inklings that you could get on Amazon, I think, right now.
You know, Paul, I haven't read that yet. Is that it's called The Inklings?
It's called The Inklings. It's
Ooh,
really good.
You want to get me that for Christmas?
Why, yes, John Mark, I have it now.
Rebecca, but let me this is great. What do you want Paul to get you for Christmas?
Okay, moving on.
Taliesin through Logris? No. Okay, tell us about the Inklings. Keep going.
And what they were was a group of like-minded individuals who realized that the intellectual life was worth pursuing. It was the thing that made you more human. It was the thing that got you to wrestle with the harder ideas.
Drank a lot of beer.
They did drink a lot of beer. That's not necessary to discuss great books.
Plato says it is in the Laws. He said, I think it's Laws 2. He says beer, the essential element in doing philosophy.
You're quoting the Laws? It's because no one will go look it up.
I'll tell you what. If we have a single listener out there that can find that Plato did not advocate the drinking of beer in the Laws. We'll send you a
am I actually going to make a point
DVD
here?
Or yeah, are no, you gonna... no, go ahead.
So the point is that the kind of work that came out of them, Narnia, Lord
beer,
of the Rings.
Beer.
Oh, my.
Beer.
Yeah, okay. Is the thing that has driven our intellectual culture.
No, you're exactly right. Tory wouldn't exist if it weren't for the books that they put out. All kidding aside, mm-hmm. when I imagine an evening where somebody was reading Narnia and pieces of Lord of the Rings and other things, I'm stunned. I just can't imagine this going on.
Well, by the way, I don't want to make it sound like only really smart Oxford dons can get together and talk about these kind of ideas. That's just not true. It's a rigor. It's something that you get used to. It's like going to the gym. You can build muscle in this way.
Yes.
And you have to pursue it. It's worth it because it is about making your humanness. Your rational capacities are a fundamental aspect, and it's the thing that distinguishes you from everyone else or from all other animal beings.
Will I start saying fundamental aspect if I do this? I mean,
yes, you
it's
will.
Like I've been told when I go to LA Fitness that the main reason women don't work out is that they're afraid that they will look overly muscular, which given the flabbiness of our culture is a bizarre belief. It would be like my believing I might get too ripped if I go work out, a danger that I'm not likely to fall into.
I was going to comment on that. But.
Yeah.
So, Rebecca, do you think that people worry that they're going to become too intellectual, which is kind of insane? What's your reaction?
It is insane because we think, and what we learn in institutions, education, the higher you get, the more specialized you get.
Yes.
So if you are incredibly educated, you are really, really good at one specific thing. What we'd rather do is that the more educated you are, the better you can read and think and communicate. the better you will live your life in all areas.
And so these tools are usable in all different venues. So if you are a stockbroker, the ability to think well and write well is very important. If you are a doctor, it's very important. It doesn't really matter what vocation you follow. And by the way, as a servant of Jesus Christ, as you try to articulate him, as 1 Peter talks about being ready to give a reason for the hope that you have, that is a necessary condition of our spiritual walk and part of our kingdom.
Of your mind and your communication.
Yes. Read well, write well, think well. Give us an anecdote, Rebecca. An anecdote is a special word for a story that is heartwarming and effective, that'll help a listener understand what effect this can have on somebody who maybe has never been exposed to this kind of thing before. I'm just asking you off the top of your head to think of one. So do you have that kind of thing? What's your story?
Yeah, my story was I actually wasn't an avid reader by any means in high school. But you
were a smart kid. You made good grades.
I was a straight-A student, but that didn't mean I could read well and think well.
Okay, that's huge. Did you just hear her? Yeah, so her assessment showed that she was getting straight-A's, but she actually self-reports, yeah, I got straight-A's, but I didn't know if I think I was well trained or educated.
Well, Paul, I hate to say this because I say this a lot. This just means you were right about what you said at the beginning of the show about assessment versus real education.
Yes. Yeah.
So repeat it for us, and then we're back to Rebecca's story.
No, it's just there's a big distinction between that. You think that when you are assessing someone, you are actually getting a true sense of their abilities. And I would say that that is false, the way assessment is done today.
Oh.
Rebecca is just confirming that with us.
Paul Spears does intellectual smackdown on No Child Left Behind in the educational establishment. Well done,
Amen.
Paul Spears.
Off the top rope, I'd like to
Lindsay,
say.
Lindsay, Spice Girl Stallions, if you're listening out there, that one was for you. Go ahead, Rebecca.
But
it's Lindsay Marshall, by the way. Maiden names are always in my head forever college professor. Go for it.
Well, I discovered, and what a lot of our students discover, is that the pleasure that comes from this kind of dialogue, from reading, from community of this nature, and it is truly pleasurable. It's work.
So what happened to you? You ran into this? What, did somebody grab you and shove Play-Doh up your nose? What happened?
A lot of our students come because of word of mouth. This is a hard thing to describe because there isn't a felt need, because people usually aren't sitting out there thinking, if only I could read Play-Doh for a week, my problems would be solved. So it's a lot of word of mouth. And when a student's life has changed, that affects their community and their church. And that's exciting. If you've met a Wheatstone alum, they are itching to tell you their story.
But they don't know what the problem is.
Yes.
They know there's a problem, though,
yes,
right? That's
Paul
the issue.
Spears.
So they may, it's sort of like going to the doctor and going, I feel funny here. They don't know what the issue is, but they know there's something wrong. And I think that that's what you get when students come to Wheatstone, because they go, oh my gosh, I've wanted this my whole life.
Exactly.
Let me say something clearly. If I have this story right, in the state of Texas, people that I agree with in some ways on things like intelligent design have acted intolerantly towards a person who had different views. They actually believed in Darwinism, something we're not particularly friendly to at Scriptorium Daily. And a person lost their job for advocating going to a philosophical speech by someone like Barbara Forrest.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of reactionary, inappropriate way of responding to ideas that we don't like that I think indicates a fearfulness, indicates a loser mentality. Let's be clear. If that's what happened, if somebody lost their job because they have a pro-Darwin point of view in an educational group, we're not for that. You're talking about reading Plato, Rebecca, and I think the kind of person that would be for firing someone who has this kind of view in a government job, we're not talking about a religious institution, would say, why should I send my kid to read Plato? Why don't we just read the Bible? And we do read the Bible at a place like, you do read the Bible at a place like Wheatstone.
Yeah.
Or a place like Torrey, why not just read the Bible and forget Plato, who's obviously wrong about a lot of things?
Because it's the foundation of the culture we're living in, and it helps us understand the times, it understands the people around us, our history and culture, and an intolerance for people that aren't Christian is just, it's not Christian.
Shouldn't we just hide from all this? Shouldn't we just build a fort? Your last name? Yeah. Shouldn't we just hide inside of...
Nice.
No, it's so terrible. Well, now we're stuck forever on your last name. And just hide? I mean, why should we bother to do this kind of interaction? Won't we get dirty and messed up and yee?
It's incredibly difficult and messy. It's just not the model set up for us by Christ in the early church. And Paul was in Mars Hill, not hiding away. So we have to be equipped to dialogue at that level, the cultural level. And that's what we're hoping to do with our students, that they be leaders that take Christianity to the public sphere and communicate in an effective, winsome way that changes lives and changes culture.
In other words, Paul Spears, we want to be, and we'll wrap up with this, Acts chapter 17 Christians, mm-hmm. where Paul not only knew Stoic philosophy better than the people he was talking to, but he could use that to bring them to transforming power of Christ.
It becomes necessary to be able to engage the culture. And you have to have that academic ability.
So yes. Biblical Christians who, instead of dialoguing Socratically with their Darwinian critics, fire them or try to hide from them, have blown it in an important way, because if they're Christians, and I don't know if this chap is a Christian or just pro-ID, this is not mm-hmm. the same thing, he's not following the Acts 17 model. Last thoughts about that from Rebecca.
Well, I think... the easy thing is to just know your own team and your own side. It's harder, and it is scarier and messier. But the truth will reveal itself. Those who seek will find. And we have to be courageous and work very, very hard to know both our own side and the other.
And by the way, fear is also a driving factor
here.
Oh,
well done. Well done, Paul Spears.
And you have to not be afraid, because the truth is that Jesus is who he said he is. The Bible is true, and it can withstand any kind of pounding that the academics are going to try to throw at it.
So WheatstoneAcademy.com, Rebecca Fort, you know, you're an alumni of Torrey Honors. You were a great student when you were here. You've gone on to do great things for the cause of Christ. I have to thank you, because my two children have been deeply helped by going to Wheatstone. When my son, who, for all you alum out there, is actually filling out his college application to go to college next year, had to reflect on changes in his life, spiritual formation, he started thinking about Wheatstone tutors that he could use as references and what Wheatstone did in his life. Is this a normal thing? Give a parent three reasons. You got 1 minute to give parents three reasons they should send their kid to Wheatstone.
Oh, man. They'll have the most fun of their life. Every student says it's the funnest week of their summer by far, but they'll discover a kind of fun and pleasure that they is.
So you guys do good. A lot of roller coasters and Disneyland
yeah.
trips?
Yeah, not.
And...
The Getty Museum doesn't count.
No.
Second reason they should send their kid.
Become a resource to them, like you said, for LD, your son. We become a resource to them after. Next week we're having a group of probably 30 alum coming to hang out and have dinner and talk about ideas.
Yeah, the strange thing is my son obviously has been surrounded by intellectual content all his life, even more than most kids would have a chance. Al Geyer, who's sort of the Yoda of Torrey, taught us all how to do what we do. He sat in discussions with him. And yet somehow sitting in a discussion with another 18 to 22-year-old who cares about the cause of Christ and intellectual activity, way more transformative
Absolutely.
To him than even sitting in with Al, as rich as that is, which he did this last week. Why do you think that is, Rebecca?
It's a strength in community. And
yes.
The problem is, if you have an intellectually inclined student, he's going to go to USC next year, and he won't find Christians there. And he'll have his intellectual awakening, the most intellectually challenged he's ever been, and he'll think it's because he's in a secular environment.
Give us a final reason, one pithy sentence, a kid should go to Wheatstone Academy at wheatstoneacademy.com.
We'll give him a foundation for his academic study, his life, his entertainment, his relationships that is Christian, and that will sustain him through the college years as a thoughtful Christian student.
So what you've said is enjoyment, community, and a sustaining cause of Christ thing. Paul Spears, give us a last sentence or two on why in the world it would be true with all the Christian organizations at a place like UCLA and USC, some of which I work for and we think are swell, that people wouldn't find intellectual content on campuses.
I think that what they have to understand is that the amount of time they spend in these organizations is small. They
yes.
have to have a foundation built before they go, and then these organizations can help them.
Yeah.
Yes.
We need a community of the mind, not just a community of the heart, and we can't separate those two things, and I'm afraid we do.
Can
yeah,
I say
please.
One final thing before
you get the
we
last
go.
Word here?
What
Dr.
I want to
Spears.
Point out is that what happens is that we falsely think that there is no intellectual content in Christianity. We go into the secular world and we think that's where the real stuff is. And we become tricked in believing that our historical intellectual understanding is vacuous.
Hmm.
And that the real truth is actually grounded in the hallowed halls of these larger institutions. And that's, and then we think, oh no, I've been lied to. And what Wheatstone does is drives home the fact that no, the real intellectual tradition has started and worked through Christianity in the West.
Well, for Rebecca Fort, who is the director of Wheatstone Academy, which can be found at wheatstoneacademy.com, or my colleague, Dr. Paul Spears, this is John Mark Reynolds, general runner of insane things, for Middlebrow, a service of Scriptorium Daily, and education today has been a big idea that's undergone the digital martyrdom.